Hello, everybody. It's Larry Goins. Welcome to the bi-weekly Q&A calls for Inner Circle Only students. What is happening?
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
Hey. So, who we got on the line that wants to speak up? Some people just sit back and be quiet, and some people like to talk. That's okay either way. There's no scheduled agenda. I'm just here to answer any and all questions you might have about real estate or deals you're working on or anything. Anybody want to jump in and say who your name and where you're from?
Yeah, this is Ryan Farr from Little Rock, Arkansas.
What's going on, buddy? Yeah, we talked on the phone today.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, cool, man. Congratulations on your first HUD deal. That's awesome, man. I'm excited for you.
Me too.
Brand new Inner Circle student. And we hung out in Houston last couple of weeks ago and got his first HUD deal. That's
awesome.
Really cool,
tell us
man.
About it. Tell us about
Say what?
Tell us about your deal.
Yeah, tell us okay. about your deal.
Okay. Well, it's a four-bedroom, two-bath, 1,400 square feet. And it was originally listed for $47,000, and then it dropped to $37,600. And I made an offer of, I think, 28, I think. And then it dropped to 25.9. And so I kept the offer the same because I figured, you know, there would be other people bidding on the same property. And so the listing agent called me today and said I got it accepted. And so going through the whole due diligence and all that stuff. So, you know, I'm still learning everything, still learning how the process goes. But I'm just excited to finally get one going and excited for more. So
that's awesome. Now share with them because you had we talked on the phone today because you know, you had that deal. You wanted to kind of get an idea as to what to do. So would you mind sharing with everybody what I told you to do to get things lined up for this deal and make sure it was a good deal and due diligence and all that good stuff?
Right. Yeah. So basically just to get everything lined up before I even close because I plan on selling the note. So, you know, Larry was telling me to, you know, get my note buyer lined up. Also to, you know, to market the property and, you know, with signs on the, you know, the end of the street, but not on the property. You can't give the address on the property yet, but you can still market it for your, you know, either your whoever you're owner financing it to or rent it to. Let's see what else. Put up an ad on Craigslist, and kind of gave me like the caption that it should be. But yeah,
exactly. And ads all around town. Not ads. I mean, bandit signs all the way around town that say owner financing. And with your phone number on it, put them in front of Walmart, CVS, convenience stores, and restaurants on the corners, intersections, stoplights, and entrances to neighborhoods, and all stuff like that. And go to your local REIA group, start finding some people
oh, yeah.
that may have an interest in buying the notes. Look for landlords. Look up online and see who has multiple properties in the area. Those are your landlords, and they would be good note buyers as well because landlords like cash flow. So, that's really good, man. Congratulations. It looks on the surface, based on what you told me, that deal will work. So I'm really excited for you.
Me too.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. But just be sure because you got to get that money and that check in, you know, that check and the contract and stuff in right away so the clock is ticking. So be sure and hit the ground running, getting your marketing out there so you can get her sold, you know, get your note buyer lined up so you can go through and get that baby closed.
Exactly.
That's good, man. That's good. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thanks also for sharing that because I know, you know, this is your first call on the biweekly Q&A calls since you even signed up for Inner Circle. So
yeah.
I appreciate you sharing that with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. All right, cool. Anybody have a question you want to throw out?
Yeah, Ryan. Brian, this is Don from Houston again. Do you mind me asking, how are you paying for the property?
I'm actually meeting with lender at a bank, a smaller bank here in Arkansas. Meet with him tomorrow, and you know, hopefully I can get everything situated there.
So you get a conventional loan?
Well, probably. I mean, I don't know. I guess so. I mean, maybe a conventional or maybe just a business loan, because you know, I'm kind of still looking for that. So not really 100% sure, but looking at the different options. So
gotcha.
You could look for maybe a line of credit. Sometimes they call it a guidance line of credit.
Okay.
Or a commercial line of credit. And also an unsecured business line of credit is another option as well.
Okay.
Those are all several good options that you could ask for and talk about when you go meet with the banker.
Okay.
Also, when you go to your RIA group meeting, go to the RIA group meeting and ask guys who's using private money or who lends private money, and see if you can talk to them, because all you really need is just some short-term money.
Right.
Now, here's another thing, too, that you want to keep in mind, guys. And I know there's a lot more people doing seller financing, because that's a lot more of what I'm doing now, and and you're able to pay more for a property and do that and make more money than wholesaling, actually. So one of the things that you could keep in mind, if you find a local title company or attorney, you guys use title companies or attorneys there, Ryan?
Title companies.
Title companies. Okay, cool. All right, so find a local title company that will allow you to do back-to-back closings, okay? Simultaneous closings, and they are there, all right? So find some that will allow you to do that. Then here's what you do. You have your note buyer lined up to buy your note, okay? You have them lined up in advance, okay? Now you got your property under contract, you're marketing it, you got your buyer lined up to buy it, okay?
Okay.
On the day you buy it, okay, the day you buy it, you're going to show up, okay, and the buyer for the property is going to show up, and the note buyer is going to already have their money wired there, okay?
Okay.
They can show up if they want to. Most of the time those guys don't, okay? But they can have their money ready to go, all right? So here's what you do. The money's there. You close on the buy, all right? Then you close on the sale with seller financing. At the same time, you assign the note to the note buyer. You use the money from the note buyer to pay the seller, and you keep the difference. It's called table funding using your note buyer, okay? It's a way to do it without any of your own money. Now, it is a little more tricky to do. I'll be the first one to tell you that, all right? Because you've got to not only have two people lined up, you know, your seller and your buyer, but back-to-back, but you also got to have your note buyer ready. But if you got your note buyer, they're the ones with the money anyway. So then all you got to do is find a buyer to sell the property to at the same time, so that way you can, you know, buy it, sell the note all at one sitting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I don't remember you talking about that. I was just looking through my notes and I saw table funding.
Yo, you remember that? Yeah. We were at the 3-day training recently and over in Houston. Yeah. That's cool. Well, good, man. I'm excited for you on that deal. Anybody else have a question for me or Ryan, as it sounds like?
Larry, is that also considered a double close? Is that also referred to as a double close?
Yes. That's just another term for a double closing. Some people call it a simultaneous closing. And but when you're actually selling the note, it's really table funding your buyer using your note buyer. Lenders do it all the time. Sometimes you see lenders that will make you a loan, and they're really a broker, but they close. Now, I'm talking about traditional loans, like getting a 30-year fixed-rate loan or whatever. They're really a broker, a mortgage broker, but they close in their own name. Even though they don't have money, the note buyer has wired the money already based on their own underwriting guidelines, and they approve the borrower. but the broker closed in their own name but assigned the loan to the lender at closing, and they really just table funded the deal. All they did was the person who really funded the loan, which was really the note buyer, you know, they funded the deal at the table for the broker who originated the loan. So it's really the same thing. Table funding using a note buyer. Anybody else have a question?
This is Cheryl, Larry. I'm in Arizona. I'm new with you guys.
What's up? How are you doing? Congratulations. Welcome aboard.
I'm going to North Carolina here in a week to meet you guys. I've been talking to Dean for a while.
That's awesome. Yeah, Dean is the bomb, isn't he?
Yeah, I love him. Yeah, he's great.
He's great.
I'm looking at this property in Florida, and to me it's a good price, but, you know, I'm thinking of the seller finance approach, and, you know, I'm understanding it could be a wreck as long as it's livable kind of thing.
Right.
But
Did you say wrecked as long as it's livable?
Yeah, it could be like in bad condition, like a wreck, kind of messed up or whatever.
Well, yeah, but it does need to be livable.
Yeah, but it has to be livable, right, exactly.
Right, if you want something that somebody doesn't feel like they have to go in and start remodeling. Does that make sense?
That they can, yeah, they can be there and do it on their own time, kind of. Nothing that needs to be urgent.
Right.
So,
and
okay.
The better condition, the better, actually.
Okay. And so ones that are in worse condition, would you do that as a wholesale to a fix and flip person more than? You know what I'm asking?
Seller financing?
If the house isn't really, in my opinion, livable, they would have to do work on it, even though it looks like somebody is living in this house. But anyways, if I don't feel like it's livable, that it needs repairs done before that, instead of doing a seller finance, would it be better to do it as like a wholesale?
Yes, you could, as long as you're in it low enough to where there's money left in it for a fix and flip investor or for somebody to pay you cash that's going to live in it.
Okay, because this person, they're asking, I don't have it under contract, but he's calling me, asking me if I want it or not, because I told him, hey, let me know about this a couple days ago, and then I was sick the whole weekend. But anyways, he's asking 16, and the ARV is about 70. And
he's asking 16?
16, yeah. And
okay, if he's asking 16 and the ARV is 70, it's probably not a seller finance deal because it needs way too much work.
Yeah, and it's three-bedroom, one-and-a-half bath, built in 1962. He's saying it needs $12,000 in rehab, but there's no way. I mean, the roof is... the eaves and stuff are all rotted, and, you know, I mean, you could just look at all the windows are broken. You could just see that it needs,
Think about this. If they're asking 16 and it needs 12 in work, that's 28 all in.
28, right.
And if it's really worth 70, 28 all in, you know, they would have sold that deal in minutes.
They would have kept it themselves and made the money on it.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's your sign right there.
Right? Yeah. Well, I'm looking at it saying, wow, this is a wreck, you know, this house. You
is
know,
it a wholesaler that
well.
Has it?
I just kind of met this guy a couple days ago, you know, because I, you know, through Craigslist calls. He's like a real estate investor in Florida, and he had another one for sale for $26,000. You know, and so I don't know that neighborhood, and I looked it up on, you know, all the websites to see, like, and it says, like, that neighborhood's, like, two times the crime rate of everywhere else, and, you know, those kind of things, too. I was trying to get an overview of, like, the neighborhood, if it's a bunch of boarded-up houses or not.
Yeah, go on,
you know,
Trulia,
house,
and look at the
house.
Heat map for the crime.
Yeah, and it said it was, like, two times the average on all of the crimes, you know, not just one or two things, like, everything was double.
Yeah.
Or more. So, yeah. So,
how many murders in a neighborhood are too many for you?
Oh, yeah, too many, right? just like their safe levels of arsenic in your water. That one's funny to me, too. Yeah, what's
that's
the safe level of arsenic? Yeah. So, okay, but I was just looking for some guidance on that because I'm thinking there's way more than 16 or 12, in repairs anyway, so that you wouldn't be getting that profit out
that's,
that you
that's a wholesale
to.
Deal, okay?
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's run the numbers on that, okay? Let's say the ARV really is 70, okay?
Okay.
So 70,000 times 0.7 is 49,000. All
right?
Let's say it needs 20 in work, okay?
Right. Be a little
minus
liberal.
20,000. So now you're down to 29,000. If you want to make $10,000 on it, you could buy the house for 19. There you go. Now, we didn't even figure in any hard money cost or closing cost.
Or holding
cost. Like taxes, insurance, and all that. So, I mean, on the surface, if the deal really needs 20 at work, if it's really worth 70, then, hey, it might be a pretty good deal. But based on what you're telling me, it might even need more than 20 in work.
Mm-hmm.
But what you could do is, if you got it under, if it's with another wholesaler, they're probably not going to let you get it under contract and then go out and do a lot of due diligence. But maybe they will. Who knows? But I would get a couple of rehab estimates just to be sure. But that sounds
mm-hmm.
like it may be a wholesale deal. Although $70,000 is kind of low for an after repaired value for a fix and flip. The lower
mm-hmm.
the price house on a fix and flip, the harder it is to sell, because people who are typically going to live in a house, and this is not set in stone. I mean, it's just kind of a rule of thumb just based on experience. But people who are going to live in a lower priced house are going to be less likely to have good credit.
Right.
Therefore,
and that's also reflective of the neighborhood, too.
If the neighborhood has a lot of crime, there you go. There's probably more rentals than there are owner-occupants as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I'm just saying the pricing also kind of reflects the neighborhood if the house isn't
yes.
worth that much.
Exactly. If I'm doing a fix and flip, you know, I want to be in 150-plus neighborhood for an ARV. Does that make sense?
Yep, sure does.
We have one that we're closing on, what's the date, Monday, on Wednesday, that we sold for $233,000, and it was a fix and flip. But I very rarely do fix and flips, but it is one that I do have that we did a fix
yeah.
and flip on.
Well, this one, you know, I did the comps from the computer, like this different site, and then
right.
This rehab cost, this estimate, supposedly came from his contractor that he deals with. You know, that's his estimate. He has the guy go out and give him an estimate.
Right.
But I'm like, yeah, and I'm in Arizona. This is in Florida. I can't go check it very easily. I don't know if that's the going rate or, you know, prices are a lot different there or not, you know.
How big is the house?
930 square feet.
Okay. Well, typically, you know, if you want to get a rough estimate, use $20 a foot. So you're right at $20,000.
Right at 20. 20 would be a safer estimate, yeah.
Right.
I would say 20 is the safer estimate.
Yeah. And even at 20, if the ARV really is 70, you're okay. But there again, you know, you're going to have trouble selling it to a retail buyer that has the credit to get a loan to pay you off.
Right, right. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank
you. So it might be better trying to find a landlord to buy
yeah.
it. Yeah. And if it didn't need much work, you could sell or finance it, but that's not the case.
Right. I was thinking sell or finance, but then I'm looking at these pictures and I'm thinking, wow, that needs a lot of work.
Exactly. Exactly. Cool. Well, I hope that helped.
It did. Thanks.
Good. All right. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, Larry.
Yeah.
I've been on the HUD Home Store site a lot, and I've been looking in the Houston area and the Texas area. I don't see a lot of cheaper houses, or the ones I do are quite rural. There's not a lot around them.
Uh-huh.
Is there any particular other states or areas, parts of the country where you know, you would specifically look.
Yeah, and what model are you trying to do?
Filthy Riches.
Okay. Now, what kind of price range you want to stay in, or does it really matter?
Well, it doesn't really matter, you know, whatever's a deal and whatever, you know.
Okay, cool.
I can make work.
Alabama is good. Tennessee is good. Georgia is good. It really, pretty much anywhere in the Southeast except for Florida. And the only reason I say that is, you know, Florida is a more hot market, although there are properties you can get down there pretty cheap. But Florida being a hot market, it's going to be harder to get good deals down there because there are more people bidding on the same property.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about the Houston area and the greater Houston area and Texas in general?
Okay, Texas is hot as well. DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, Texas, Austin, San Antonio, those are all pretty hot markets. So it's going to be a little more difficult to get a deep discounted property.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Phoenix is right now, too.
Phoenix is the same way. Las Vegas is the same way. You know, just like parts of California, San Diego, Orange County, you know, they're all the same way.
So where are you recommending finding deeply discounted ones?
Pretty much.
In the Southeast?
Anywhere in the Southeast is good. Northeast is also good in some areas. I say Northeast. I'm geographically challenged. Let me just clarify. Indiana, Ohio, Illinois. That's like in the middle of the U.S., but it is north. So, yeah, those three or four states are good. There's a lot of lower-priced properties in Indiana. There's a lot of lower-priced properties in Ohio. And I'm not just necessarily talking about Cleveland or Akron. You know, in Cincinnati, there's some good price properties. Just places like that. But if it's in hot markets, you can buy deals there. It's just harder to get a deal because there's more people bidding on the same property.
Mm-hmm. It's really competitive right now over here.
It's competitive. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
That's why you got to go out. I will tell you, we've got right now, we have 13 deals on the board right now that we have in the pipeline. And I'll tell you, the majority of those are out in the more rural areas. Not necessarily completely rural, but they're more out in the rural areas. Smaller towns, bedroom communities, you know, towns, not cities. Not big enough days.
What size town, Larry, are you thinking about? And what other criteria would you put on for rural areas?
Well, here's the thing you got to remember about rural. First of all, let me answer your first question. What size town? I don't really care. I don't look. I don't say it's got to have a population of X. I don't do that, okay? Especially with the HUD stuff, we just bid on all the HUD houses, okay? And we're still getting good HUD houses. We got a HUD house today for $17,000, and it started out being listed in the 40s, I believe. It dropped to the 30s, and I think it's currently listed for $29,900, and we got it for $17,000. And it's a HUD house. It's a double-wide mobile home. Has its own land, and it really just needs paint and carpet, you know, if that. I could probably get by without doing anything. I could probably just get by doing carpet, and that may be what I do. But there again, even with seller financing, I could advertise it and say, you know, I will give the buyer, you know, credit for, you know, an allowance for the paint and carpet, and then I could just lower the price or lower the down payment, if that makes sense. But I don't really look at the number of, you know, population or whatever in a city or town or county, community, whatever. I don't do that. With the HUD, we're just marketing and making offers. I shouldn't say marketing, but making offers all over the state. Now, with the other properties, the MLS and stuff like that, what I'm doing is I assign my guys, and I have two guys in the office, and I assign them with a territory, which is county. I break up the areas into counties, and I try to stay closer to my office if I can. But, like, right now, I'm near Charlotte, North Carolina. Of the 13 deals that we have, six of them are in and around the Fayetteville area, which is about 3 to 4 hours away from me. And I don't know why that happened. It just happened. But as far as rural goes, your second question, I am not opposed to rural. However, you want to talk to several agents and ask them, what's the average days on market and how quick would it take me to sell at this price? Or you could say it this way, at what price would I be able to sell this for a quick sale, 30 days or less? And then also, if you're wanting to sell or finance the deals, you ask them if, based on this area, this neighborhood, this type of house, you know, do you think a person would be able to come up with $5,000 to $10,000 down or more? You know, we like to ask for 20%. If we're selling it for $79,900, it's $80,000. We'd really like to get $16,000 down. Is that going to happen? More than likely not. But is it likely we can get $5,000 to $10,000 down? Yes. And one of the things I've come to realize, when even seller finance deals, it's a lot easier wholesaling deals, but, and what I'm about to say, but if you're seller financing a deal, sometimes you're going to have to hold that property in inventory for a week or two or three before you find the right buyer that has, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 to put down. And that's just the way it is. So you might have to have a partner come up and put up the money, or have some other kind of alternate source, use a source like Prosper.com or LendingClub.com or something like that. Like the little house we picked up today, $17,000. You can go over to Prosper.com and raise $17,000 to do that. You can get an unsecured business line of credit. You know, it's just a lot of things that you could do. So anyway, one thing I will tell you about rural people is there's fewer buyers in rural areas. However, the buyers are more stable and they pay better than in big MSAs. And it's just because they're from a small town, they have better work ethic, and they just seem like, you know, better payers. So I know that was a long way to answer your two questions, but I hope that helped.
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, I have a question as far as, I guess, dual agency, you know, listing agent being my, you know, my agent as well.
Right.
What do you recommend as far as, you know, dual agency, or should you get your own agent?
Well, that's a really, really good question, and I'm going to start out by explaining a little bit of it based on the fact that not everybody on here may understand what you're talking about. So
okay.
when an agent starts to work with a buyer or a seller, they have what's called an agency disclosure. Now, an agent can represent a seller. An agent can represent a buyer. The agency can represent both, or the agency can represent neither one, okay? And if they represent neither one, then you are a customer and not a client, okay? When they represent you, they have a fiduciary responsibility, if you're the seller, to get you as much as they can for that house. If they're your buyer's agent, they have a fiduciary responsibility to get you the best deal. if they represent both or neither, they're basically going to do neither one, okay? In other
mm-hmm.
words, if they represent you and the seller, if they tell you something, they're not going to, if you tell them something, you know, like, hey, I want you to offer 50, but I'll really go up to 55, they're not going to tell the seller. On the other hand, if the seller says, hey, you know, we'll counter at 65, but I'm really willing to take 60, they're not going to tell you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I would just as soon have no representation. I would tell, you know, here's what I do. Whether this is true or not, you know, you could use this depending on how comfortable you are. You could say, it's okay, I don't need representation, I know what I'm doing. And if nothing else, that just gives the agent, you know, makes them think, wow, this guy, he knows what he's doing. So it might help you in that regard. But we do have, just to let you guys know what we do in our office, now this is for the Carolinas. I have a buyer's agent that all my offers go through in the Carolinas, okay? And my guys call up, and when they're talking to the listing agent, my guys call up, and they, you know, they are talking through the buyer's agent to the listing agent about the client, which is me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, then they're able to talk to them about the property and get all the detailed information and, you know, and they basically, my guys who work with me, my acquisition guys, they've gone through whatever training they need to as an unlicensed assistant to an agent. So they are an unlicensed assistant to the agent, and they'll call up and say, hey, yeah, this is, you know, this is Carol over with Sweet Carolina Houses, and we've got a client that wants to make an offer on the house at 125 Oak Street, and I just wanted to see if it was still available. Hey, have you been in the house? Well, my client likes for us to call in advance and get an idea, what are the amount of repairs, what would it rent for? You know, they primarily do seller financing. What do you think they could get down for a house for seller financing in this area? You know, how long do you think it would take to sell? What do you think they could sell it for? By the way, do you have any buyers that have called, maybe inquiring about this house, that have $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 to put down? You know, hey, if you've got a buyer like that, you know, we can get our client to buy the house, and then you can sell it, and you still get your commission on both sides. So anyway, that's kind of what they do whenever they call up.
Okay, because I've actually talked to a listing agent. She said that she had, you know, she already had people lined up to, you know, to buy it, but they just didn't have, you know, they couldn't qualify for a loan or something. So
that's cool. You ask her how much they have to put down, and offer to pay her a commission to sell it for you.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be you could pay 3%. I mean, if she sold, say you bought the house for $30,000 and you sold it for $69,900 or let's just say $70,000. 3% of that is $2,100. If they were putting $5,000 or $10,000 down, it would be worth it to pay them $2,100 to have it sold for you.
Definitely.
Sometimes you can also just offer them, you know, a flat $500 or $1,000. They're not going to get too thrilled about $500, but they would be okay with $1,000 for the most part. Especially if they're the listing agent and they're selling you the property anyway. So that way they're just double dipping. They're going to get paid when they sell it to you and when they sell it for you.
So you said ask how much that those people can put down, and then what was the next part?
You can offer to pay them a commission.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Did that help?
Yeah, it did.
Good. That's good. Cool. Anybody else have a question?
Yes, Larry, this is Amin from Boston.
How are you, sir?
Okay, good. I just started the coaching with Nathan.
Yeah, good.
I'm working on the seller financing model, Filthy Riches.
That's awesome. That's really cool. That's a hot model right now.
Yeah, yeah. I got a few potential houses, went through with Nathan this morning, and he picked out about 6 houses for me to pursue, make offers.
Good.
The only thing I'm kind of hesitant is he told me to make offers at 20% of listing price. Makes me kind of nervous if the agent will hang up on me or they're going to be annoyed at coming in at such a low price.
Well, here is the reason that Nathan is telling you that, okay?
Uh-huh.
This would be your first deal, right?
Yes.
Okay. He wants you to start out making some low offers and get comfortable with going through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wants to make sure that you don't pay too much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
And because we are all at our office a firm believer that if your first offer is ever accepted, it was too high. And we also know that your first deal needs to be a home run. So he wants you to go through the motions and learn how to deal with the rejection and be able to handle that. And, yeah, you might miss a few deals to start out with, but then you're going to start raising your prices a little bit and your offer amount. And you and him will pin down more tighter numbers because you can pay more than 20%, you know, of list price, but he wants to get you started there and get you comfortable with it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Good. Where are you making offers at?
We picked a few houses in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Okay. Well, that's good. I got quite a few going on there. I'll sell you a house in Fayetteville if you want one. Just kidding. Kind of.
So, Larry, with that in mind.
He'll get you up there, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Good.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Larry, I heard what you said and agree with what you said, but with that in mind, what's kind of a maximum offer we want to say that's not a good deal at, like 40 or 50%?
The percentage is not as important as what you would be able to sell it for.
After repair value?
Or if you're selling it as a wholesale deal, yes, but if you're selling it with seller financing and going to sell the note, then you need to be figuring what can I sell this house for with seller financing and then what can I sell that note for and then back out your profit. And
okay.
There
okay.
is the number you can pay for the house.
Okay.
I'll give you an
example. It depends on your exit strategy, yeah.
It depends on your exit strategy. You're absolutely right. We have 2 deals right now. And I'm a little reluctant to tell you guys this, but this is the real world. But I have 2 deals right now that I paid over list price for. All right? One, it was listed for 31. I paid 35. And the reason is because they had 3 other bids come in, and I knew it. The agent told me, but they wouldn't tell me what the bids were. But so I bid 35 and I got it, and I put another 5 in it. So I'm in it for 40, but I'm selling it for 89.9, and I'm going to get somewhere between 5 to 10 down, and I could sell that note for anywhere from 60 to close to $70,000. So I could make $20,000 to $30,000 on this deal. And I just did a little bit of work. It has hardwood floors, but I did some painting and some other little knick-knack stuff and put a new heat pump in it. And the other one, the other house, it was a house that, it was a HUD house. And the first one I told you about was not, but this one was actually a HUD house. It was listed for 40, I believe it was, 41, 42, and we ended up paying 45.6 for it. And it had several bids come in that the realtor said, the listing agent said, you know, It's only available to owner ox right now, but tomorrow it opens up for investors. In other words, it's an extended listing on HUD. And she said, I know there are three investors that are going to be bidding on it tomorrow. So we bid it up to 45, and this is a four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath, modular home. It needs no work. In fact, the agent said the only thing it needs
curtains.
Is curtains. And you don't even need that because it already has blinds. So it's move-in ready. And we could sell that house for $99,000 and get 5 or 10 down and then sell the note for around $70,000. And, I mean, that's a really good deal. If we make money on it, we don't even have to touch it. So we want you to start out making low offers, but as you learn to analyze and as you learn the different models, you can get to a point where if you know it's a good deal and you can make money on it, you can pay close to list and sometimes even over list.
And that's kind of what happened with my situation. I mean, it was listed at, like I said, 47 and 37, and I put in an offer of 28, and it wasn't on HUD that day. So I was asking the listing agent, what's the deal? And he's like, well, they're probably lowering the price. So they lowered it to 25.9, and I kept my offer the same because, you know, I figured there would be, you know, multiple people bidding on it. And, you know, I could sell or finance the house for about probably $79,900 and then get $5,000 down and probably sell that note for about $58,000 and, you know, I'll still make about $35,000 off of it.
That's right. And $58,000, that would be a 15% yield for your buyer, for your note buyer. And that's a good deal for you, good deal for them. It's just good all the way around for everybody, right?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the analyzer right now, and I just put in all the numbers in, so yeah.
There you go. That's good.
Well, when you sell the note to the note buyer, do you normally sell it the full note?
It depends on what you want to do. You could sell the full note.
Mm-hmm.
You could sell a partial.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just sell enough to get their money back, so that way they're only selling maybe the first 5 or 6 years of a 20-year note. So after 5 or 6 years, you have all the payments coming in, and you have no money invested in the deal. That's a great thing to do in your retirement account. Say you have $30,000 in a retirement account. You go out and you buy a property for $30,000. You sell or finance it for $89,900. You get $5,000 down. Now you have $25,000 invested. Now you sell about 4 to 5 years worth of that note for $25,000, and now after 5 years, now you got your $25,000 back. Actually, you got your $30,000 back because $5,000 from the borrower and $25,000 from the note buyer. So now you got your $30,000 back to go do it again. And again, and again, and again, and again. So you do that for 5 years. After 5 years, you got all these notes coming due. And then after 6 years, you got another set of notes coming due. After 7 years, you got another set of notes coming due that you're getting the payments on. So you could keep doing that and literally never run out of money.
Yeah, I actually had a question about that too, regarding partial sales on the
sure.
on a note. Yeah, because with mine, I was thinking about partially selling it, but I just wasn't sure how that all worked because I would just sell enough of the note to get my money back right off the bat.
You could do that, but you want to put a little in your pocket,
right?
Especially if you're married.
Well, that's not the case, but I still need to put a little bit in my pocket too.
Just to pay the bills, right?
Right.
Household spending money. Brighten
you
your spirits up.
And it helps, and it
your
helps
morale.
Sell a spouse. Listen, whether you're a man or a woman doing this, whether you have a husband or a wife doing this, you know, it also helps sell the spouse on that, yeah, we're really making money doing this. You need to go out and celebrate a little bit.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Cool. So, anybody else have a question?
Yeah, hi, Larry.
Couple of questions, Larry, just general real estate questions. One is a quick claim deed. Do you have to, if you get a property, if you get a property and a quick claim deed, do you have to wait a year to get clear to get a regular title policy?
No, you do not. But I would, it's okay to buy a property with a quick claim deed, but just know a lot of people use them whenever they are doing like tax lien or tax deed properties or whatever, and properties that they're going to sell you that have back taxes or liens or judgments or code violations. So you can take a quit claim deed, but I would not take a quit claim deed unless I knew I was buying it free and clear of any liens or judgments or taxes or code violations, and you can get title insurance on it. If you can get title insurance on the property and you're buying it with no outstanding liens or judgments, then you're okay.
Okay. A second question. In 2009, in the Filthy Riches book, it says that they had that $8,000 credit for first-time home buyers. Is that still good?
No, that is not still good. How long have you had the Filthy Riches course?
Since 2012.
Okay. All right. Well, I had done an update after that. If you'll look on your read this first sheet, you can go to the website and download the new manual that I updated a year or so ago, and I took all that stuff out.
Okay. And the third question has to do with is there a minimum loan amount for HUD houses and rural development loans, and where do you find that information out?
A minimum loan amount for HUD
house. HUD house.
You mean
a minimum of $20,000, $50,000?
Are you talking about for an FHA loan?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not talking about buying HUD houses. You're
talking about buying HUD
houses.
But really, I meant FHA, getting an FHA loan afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. The thing about FHA, let me just clarify this. If you bought the house from HUD and you're going to sell it with an FHA loan, you'll have to hold it for at least 90 days.
Right.
Okay. That's what a lot of people say, you know, well, HUD has 90-day seasoning. No, it's not HUD. It's FHA financing that has 90-day seasoning.
Yeah. Okay? My question is more the, does HUD have a minimum loan amount? Will they loan on houses under $20,000?
I'm sure they do. I don't really know what it is, but I'm sure they do. I would imagine it's each lender has set their own minimum loan amount.
Okay.
Because
thank you. That's
FHA
helpful.
Just insures the loan. They don't make the loan.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I hope that helped.
Yep.
Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, I have
Larry,
a question. No, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Larry, it's Sal. What is the website that you had directed us to once before for us to self-post a on MLS?
For you to sell what?
No, for us to post a house on the MLS.
Yeah, I think it's usrealty.com. Does that sound familiar?
Usrealty.com. Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Did you get your house sold?
Not yet. That's what I was putting on there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, usrealty.com. You can get a house listed on the MLS for $19.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Larry.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
Hey, Larry, I have a question about if I don't have an LLC set up, doing a deal in my personal name, and kind of, what should I guess, what are the risks? You know, what's the risk in that?
Well, the risk is if something happens to the property or on the property or to the buyer who you sold it to or something, and you get sued, then they're not suing your LLC, they're suing you personally. And if you own a home, you got money in the bank, you got investments, you got cars, they could attach a judgment to you, which would mess you up. Now,
right.
What's the likelihood of that happening on your first couple deals? Very slim, but there still is a risk there.
Right. But if I'm seller financing and I own the note and they're the actual owners of the house, is that still that risk of me possibly getting sued if something happens?
Well, anything could happen. You know, their brother-in-law could come tell them, hey, I'm in the real estate business and this guy ripped you off. He didn't follow proper procedures for this, or he charged you too much for the house, or whatever, you know.
Right.
Or the short period of time that you own the house, you know, maybe you could send somebody over there to look at it and they fall and get hurt, or somebody comes over there and robs them and shoots them while they're there, you know, and
mm-hmm.
paralyzes them. While, I mean, you just never know. Any number of things could happen. It doesn't necessarily have to be the buyer with the loan that, you know, whatever. It could be anything that happens. So
mm-hmm.
there is a risk there. But, you know, chances of that happening are not huge, but there still is a risk. But I would just, you know, just go ahead and get in the process of, you know, go ahead and set up your LLC if you can. You can't do it on this one because it's a HUD house, and you've got to have your tax ID or Social Security number whenever you submit the bid.
Right.
Just set it up after you get this one closed. It's closed. You got, you know, you got some money to work with and set up your LLC and stuff, and that way you'll be ready to go.
Cool.
Awesome. Good, good. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, one question, Larry, about when we sell a seller financing house, can we sell that as soon as we close with the buyer, or do we need to allow some months to pass before the note buyer buys the note?
Okay, that's a really good question. In other words, do you have to season the note?
Uh-huh, yeah.
It depends on who you're selling it to.
Hmm?
If you're selling it to an individual, they probably don't care. If you're selling it to an institution, they're going to want to pull credit on your buyer. They may want an appraisal. They may want 6 months worth of seasoning. But it just depends on who you're selling it to. I would a lot rather sell my notes to individuals than I would sell them to institutions.
How can I get access to individuals who buy notes?
Well, anybody who likes cash flow would be good note buyers. Also, I tell you who else makes good note buyers is anyone who invests in the stock market. Okay? Mm-hmm. They make good note buyers. Sometimes you have to educate them, but they still make good note buyers. Engineers, doctors, attorneys, business professionals, business owners, you know, that sort of thing. They all make good note buyers. Go to your local REIA group. Get on some of these websites and post your notes. You can post your notes on loanmls.com. There's a place on Craigslist to post notes. Notes are posted on Real Estate Other. I meant eBay. You go to eBay and look under Real Estate Other, and that's where you'll find the notes. But, yeah, you can find those individuals out there that buy them, and you can even buy mailing lists of people who have notes. Yeah, I get letters all the time from National Acceptance Corp trying to buy notes from me. They just direct mail me all the time.
What's that name again? National
Acceptance? National Acceptance.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure. Anybody else have a question? You guys have had some good questions tonight. This has been a good, long call.
Sorry, I got a question.
Sure.
When you talk to an agent and he says you can resell that for $79.9, do you verify that amount and how?
We pull comps on Zillow or RealQuest or CoreLogic, RealList as well, and we just look at what the other sold comps in the area are. And we also know that if we're seller financing it, we can sell at the top of those comps if we're seller financing it. So, yes, we do verify everything. And also, if we're unfamiliar with the area, we might call two or three agents and ask them the same questions again.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Anybody else have a question?
I got a question. What all does the RMLO do? I know they said that you said that you know they qualify, you know, the buyer and make sure you know they you know go through the credit and everything. Basically, everything the bank would normally do.
Yeah, they also they qualify your borrower to make
sure they
have the ability to pay based on Dodd-Frank.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's primarily what they're doing. They're just protecting you.
Okay.
Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, Larry, do you ever do lease options?
I do sometimes. The thing about lease options, when you get somebody to put $5,000 to $10,000 to $20,000 down, it's harder to get them to do a lease option because their response is, "So I'm going to give you $5,000, and then I still got to go qualify for a loan before my lease is up or before my option ends." But if you seller finance a deal, they're really buying it, whether it's seller financing. Whether you actually give them a mortgage or a deed of trust, or you do a land contract, either one.
All right.
That was a good question. Anybody else? Wow, this has been good here tonight, guys.
Hey Larry, can you walk through the process of partial selling a note again? Because I'm just kind of figuring my situation, you know, if I want to partially sell mine or sell the whole thing.
Well, the only difference is all you're really selling is a specific number of payments. If you financed it for 20 years instead of selling the whole note for say $60,000, and then they collect the payments for the next 20 years. You might be selling 5 years worth of payments for $20,000, and then on the 61st payment, that payment's going to come back to you, and everyone after that is going to be your payment. So you're only really selling a specific number of payments at a specific yield. And you can sell it with or without recourse, and there is such a thing as a partial note assignment. So, you know, it's pretty simple and cut and dried.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Good. I hope that
answers. Yeah, I like that option the best because that way you get cash up front and then you still have some long-term payment money coming in too.
Exactly.
So, what would be the benefit of the note buyer? I mean, they would get, you know, they would pay, let's say they pay for 5 years, let's say they pay $30,000 for 5 years worth of payments. What's in it for them?
Well, like, they don't have to come up with as much money right up front.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if they only have $30,000 and they don't have $60,000 or $70,000 to buy the whole thing? They're
right.
Still getting the same yield on their money, but they're able to do a deal and not have to come up with as much money.
Right.
Yeah, most of them are looking for like a return on investment, like a percentage.
That's right.
Kind of on the stock market investing, you know, thought mindset still. And they're
yield.
Like looking at saying like, wow, this is a 10% yield instead of the 2% I'm getting at the bank. So this is awesome.
Right.
Right. A specific yield.
So that's where they're still getting a good deal out of it.
Right.
Cool.
Isn't it true that when you sell the full note, you take a deeper discount?
That is true. And that's because of the time value of money, because those last 10 years are not worth near as much as the first 10 years. That's why, for example, if you sold an entire 20-year note right now, say the note was $65,000, you could sell that entire note for, say, $50,000. Well, you could sell 5 years worth of it for probably $20,000. At the end of that 5 years, you could say, hey, how would you like to buy another 5 years? Give me another $20,000. At the end of that, how would you like to buy another 5 years? Give me $20,000. So realistically, you could sell $80,000. Does that make sense?
Also, that $30,000 house.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Now, my numbers in the math didn't work out because you're not going to be able to sell the note for more than the face value. Okay?
Right.
But, mm-hmm. you know, it could have been an 89.9 note or, you know, $95,000 note that you could sell four times for $5,000, or excuse me, $20,000 each. And,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's all because of the time value of money. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, I think this stuff is starting to click in finally.
Good. That is great. That's great. Yeah, it takes a little bit of time.
Yeah. Hey, I think I got one last question. Whenever you're doing seller financing, when do you determine if it'll be a 10-year or a 20-year term?
Well, I run the numbers both ways, 10, 15, and 20, and see what I can sell the note for. Now, what I can sell a partial for, and also what payments are going to best benefit the buyer.
Right.
You know, how much they can handle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think
you can run
maybe
it several different ways.
Yeah, maybe I remember somebody saying that whenever you did the 10 years, when there was like, you know, the more of the filthy richest type, like
where they're the small deals, yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I do the 10-year deals. On these double wides that I've been buying, the higher priced properties, I have been financing them for 20 years.
Have you done a 15-year before?
I have done several 15-years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even recently, but if I can, I want to stretch it out longer if I can. I know a guy that he only does 30-year loans.
Wow.
Now, the payments are a lot lower, so your cash flows, it's going to take you longer to get your cash flow up, but
right. He's
got them coming in for 30 years instead of 20, or instead of 15.
Right.
Yeah. But they even do mostly the filthy richest type deals.
I got you.
Yeah. There you have it.
Yeah.
Anybody else have a question?
I'm good. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, guys, I really appreciate you guys being on tonight. This has been really, really good. And I hope you guys got a lot out of this. And be sure and let me know if there's anything at all that you guys need in between these calls, because, you know, you can email me or call me at the office anytime you need in between the calls. I'm more than happy to answer any questions you have and help you guys out in any way. And like always, we really, really appreciate your business and appreciate your confidence in us. And we're looking forward to hearing your success stories. And, Ryan, congratulations again on your deal that you got today.
Thank you.
Awesome.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you guys being on, and I hope you guys have an awesome night and week.
Thank you.
And let us know if you need anything. We're here for you.
Okay,
thanks, Larry.
Larry.
Thanks, Larry. Good night.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate thanks, all you guys. Have a great night.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.